What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 65 of the MMArcade podcast. And man, I'm still on a high after that fight. Jack Della Maddalena is your new welterweight champion of the world.
Oh. Another Australian champion. How good does it feel to be an Aussie right now? You know, he just stuck to his guns. He did everything so well. And mate, I can't be happier. I'm proud as punch right now.
Hell yeah, dude. Obviously, we're going to be talking about that, our breakdown of the main card at UFC 315. Also, Rob's next fight was announced before the card itself, but also they announced it during the broadcast. So we're going to be chatting about that after our reactions to 315. So if you are new to the podcast, please like, subscribe. But Rob, let's get into it. In the main event, Jack Della Maddalena defeats Bilal Muhammad via unanimous decision, 48-47 times 2 and 49-46. He's your new welterweight champion of the world. Tell us about it, brother. Tell us about the fight.
Mate, it was unbelievable to watch. I thought it was such a stellar scrap, okay? Yeah. And, you know, honestly, a lot of the picks and reads that I mentioned before the fight happened took place, I feel. Jack's mid-fighting, mid-distance fighting, like fighting in range, is so good. Yeah. He does it better than anybody. And you could see Bilal was feeling, like, super uncomfortable. That first round is feeling very super uncomfortable. Jack gave a lot of looks and attack options, which really dissuaded Bilal's takedowns in that first round. He's giving a lot of looks to knees, a lot of kicks, a lot of straight line kicks, a lot of knees, a lot of uppercuts. He was kind of moving his body in a certain way. He wasn't over-committing with his punches. He was just keeping it to ones, to twos.
Yeah.
And honestly, he just kept that train and that fight discipline throughout the entire fight.
Yeah. That third round, he entered into the flow state, as we like to call it. He was kind of mocking Bilal a little bit, doing what he did. His head movement was on point. It was funny. We're talking about this prior. Bilal did say heading into this fight that he wasn't going to shoot one takedown. I think as soon as he stood toe-to-toe with Jack in the pocket and boxing range with him, he threw one in the first, and he struggled to get them throughout the fight. He was saying to his corner in between rounds that Jack's really slippery. So it wasn't even as if maybe initially he intended to not throw takedowns and he wanted to just box with Jack. But eventually he knew that it was necessary, but Jack's takedown defense was phenomenal. And even when he was taken down, a lot of the times he stood up pretty quickly.
He did, and honestly, I expected more takedowns from Bilal. Understandably, it's hard. Like, once the sweat gets going, and Jack, I'm sure his takedown defense has only rolled over since his last fight. I'm sure it's just been worked even to a higher degree. You can see the way he strikes is built to dissuade wrestlers from entering that space.
Yeah.
As well, instinctively, as soon as Bilal got on the legs or got on the thing, he went two-on-ones. He went switches. He went switches to create an opportunity to explode out of. It was, Jack was ready for this fight. You can tell he had crossed all his T's and dotted all his I's. He was, super remarkable. But his striking, his comfortability and his ability to stay in that mid-range, play with fire, and win the fight there like 9 out of 10 times. Yeah. No, 10 out of 10 times. He hasn't lost yet. guy just takes that mid space and owns it.
Dude, he went from 0-2 in his first two fights because he was saying in the UFC embedded that he took the two hardest first fights, probably shouldn't have done that. He's now 18-2. So like to come back from two down to eventually get into the UFC, win the welterweight title, just I am so bloody happy right now. And I want to touch on the takedown offense in his previous Gilbert Burns fight. I'm not going to lie. Every prediction that we do, Rob, where there's another Aussie in there, we'll always pick the Aussie 10 times out of 10.
Super biased.
Super biased. Like, continuously, we'll never not be that way, right? Now, I'm not going to lie. There was a part of me after watching that Gilbert Burns fight that was like, oh, look, you know, Bilal's really good at takedowns. He's really good at the double leg. He's really good at the fence wrestling. He could take down Jack a lot. Part of me was worried, but I still went with Jack, right? But now, if you really look at that Gilbert Burns fight, him breaking his arm probably did contribute to a lot of those takedowns that Gilbert secured, right?
Because you could see whenever Bilal would shoot in, Jack would frame up so well. There was a lot of times he'd frame up and just pop back up or turn it out and just walk away. So we could speculate that, or we could say that from the Burns fight, he learnt a lot, turned a corner, and honestly, Bilal, 90% of the time, wasn't in range for a successful shot. because Jack was not over committing with any of his strikes. You could see he wanted to, and by God, did he look good when he did. Like when he went 1-2, lower body, right hook, like, dude, the combos were so clean. And he landed, every one of them was landing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, you could tell that he was being aware, he was being disciplined, not to overcommit into his shots. And, mate, it was such a high level fight. Like, this was, I feel like this was champion Jack before he got the belt, because his level is, you know, he's leveled up, I should say. He's just, it was such a high level fight. It was a guy that has, honestly, it looked like he had been defending the title for several years now. He had that level of composure and discipline in there.
And he's only, what, 28 now? I mean, hopefully, touch wood, he goes on to have an awesome title reign. I, before we talk about next steps, though, I do want to talk about Bilal and give him some credit. We saw that in the fourth round in particular, when he was putting on the pressure. He was standing toe-to-toe there with Jack, and then he was able to level change a little bit and get some takedown. Mm. So he did have some success, but overall in that fight, man, Jack's boxing, Jack's distance management, his kicks as well. He was throwing more kicks than Bilal, especially, you know, doing the teeps, kicks to the side of the body. Such a phenomenal fight. What would you say about Bilal's performance?
I expected more takedowns.
Mm.
Okay. Now, it's easy for me to say on the outside. Okay.
Sure.
We can look in and say, oh, I don't know how he was feeling, what had happened to him during the fight. I don't know how he felt. But from the outside, was it the third or fourth round, when he mixed in his striking and his shots, when he mixed in the strikings to bring Jack onto it, to mix into his shots, they were clean every time, every time. I think his only two takedowns, more or less, were from the open mat, drawing Jack into it, sort of thing.
Mm.
Now, why didn't we see more of that? You know, I can't help but feel like Bilal was trying to make a point striking with Jack for the first three rounds.
He was, I think so.
And if that's the case, that is ridiculous.
Big mistake, right? Like,
Like Jack is amazing at that mid-range boxing. And one of my passive victories for Jack was to embrace the dogfight and make Bilal pay for every step he went forward and every time he walked away, which Jack did. Unbelievably, okay? There were no off times for Jack. He was attacking when he was forward. He was attacking when he was going back.
Yeah.
He was attacking on the switches, on his defensively. He was being offensive. It was an amazing showing from Jack.
Yeah.
But Bilal wasn't, I don't know. He wasn't, what makes, in my opinion, what brought Bilal to the title and made him champion was the fact that he could punch, 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 shoot.
Yeah.
Okay? He's not your Gilbert Burns on the ground. He's not a guy that when he gets you on your back, he's going to start working those tricky submissions and you're in a very dangerous spot. He's that game. He's that punch, punch, shoot, punch, punch, shoot. Okay.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that. Now, I can also look to it as Jack did such a good job dissuading Bilal from the takedowns, as well as just keeping that distance. Even though Jack plays in that mid-range, his spacing's amazing. You watch his footwork the entire fight. Takes two steps back forward, two steps to the right, two steps forward, moves in with a jab, moves away with a jab. Like, you know what? It's just, it's a dance. That's why I think for the first three rounds, whilst he still had like, the guys are relatively fresh, he was controlling center ring so well, so well. Wasn't letting Bilal push him up against the fence. Okay. So yeah, was that because Jack did his job so well, or was it because Bilal wanted to try and strike with him, wanted to test his mettle, which I respect in some, like, you know, rock and stick way, right? But I can't, uphill fight.
Yeah, I think even if that was the case to start the fight, certainly he was trying to go for the takedowns eventually, and Jack just snuffed a lot of them, did incredibly well. Let's talk about next steps, though, because it was actually incredible how many other fights in the UFC were hinging on this, the result of this fight. Because if Bilal had won that fight, hypothetically, you would have seen, because Islam Makhachev, they didn't want to fight each other. At least that's what Bilal kept saying, right? Islam was a bit more coy about it. he was probably going to fight Topuria for the lightweight title, right? Because Topuria moved up. And then you'll probably have Jack fight, you have Bilal fight someone else in the welterweight division. Jack now wins. And literally instantly, probably his manager tweeting out afterwards from Islam's account, it is time to go for the double champ belt. He wants to fight JDM. That's the fight that's going to happen. It is going to be JDM versus Islam Makhachev.
Yep.
And that leaves open Ilya Topuria versus probably Charles Oliveira for the vacant. Well, it depends if Islam drops the title. If he might still move up.
Because you can't get double champ status if you've vacated it.
But you know, you could. I mean, like technically, how many double champs have we seen that didn't hold them at the same time, right? Like you could still call yourself a double champ, right? Yeah,
you could.
Yeah. So whether he vacates it or not, he fights JDM and then you'll have Ilya Topuria versus Charles Oliveira either for the vacant title if he vacates it or for the interim title if he doesn't vacate it. What do you think?
If you want ultimate money, which I'm pretty sure the UFC do, that's what you do. That's the play. Because then you build up Topuria, you build up Makhachev, you get them to fight after.
Yeah.
That's obviously a lot of hurdles and assumptions are being made with these long drawn gameplay. Spreadsheets. But I think that's for maximum profit, which is usually like the company's direction, that's what's gonna happen.
Can I get your early thoughts on the lighter Islam Makhachev going up and fighting JDM for the belt? Because we've just seen in that fight, JDM do incredibly well against Bilal, snuffing the takedowns, and there's having that distance management to, as you said, dissuade Bilal from trying to attempt those takedowns. How do you think Islam does in that position? Because he's not going to have the weight. He's not going to have the body strength. We know that Islam's so good at wrestling and lightweight, especially because he has a pretty harsh weight cut. He's a big guy as a lightweight.
Yeah.
He's not going to have that advantage against the likes of JDM, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm curious. I'm very curious because I think Islam Makhachev does everything Bilal does, but better to a much higher
degree. I agree with that.
He does everything he does, but much better.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, the million-dollar question. Though, Volk landed shots on Makhachev. If Volk can land shots on Makhachev and hurt Makhachev, Jack certainly can as well, especially because he likes fighting from a closer range. That also leaves him more susceptible to takedowns. Makhachev's takedown game is much higher than Bilal's.
Yeah.
But not only that, his ability to utilize those positions Jack found himself in during this fight, he can utilize those better than Bilal can. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know. I just think that Jack had I thought Jack won the fight quite handedly. Okay. So, but it was a fight. You know, it was a fight. We were still at the end of the fight thinking, what if they screw him? You know what
I mean? Well, some of the results in the other fights, man. They could have done it.
You aren't nail-button like that, okay?
Yeah.
So, and with Makhachev doing everything that Bilal can do but better, there's too many variables.
Fair. But and then they're
my thoughts, though.
All right. Ilya Topuria, Charles Oliveira. I mean, we'll call that if that's the fight that gets made. Is it safe to say for Bilal, especially because he didn't have a title defense, and how hard it was for him to see a title shot in the first place, he probably never sees another title shot ever again, right? You're laughing, but...
because it's poor Bilal. He gets cooked everywhere, right?
Here's the thing, bro. I don't mind Bilal. I rate the guy, you know?
I don't know why everyone hates him so much, but I don't neither. Spend a lot of time on socials watching everything, so...
He is a trash talker, so he does bring a lot of it on himself. Like, I get it. But, yeah, he unless he can happen to go on another tear, and he's getting a bit older, I don't think so.
He said, I'm not leaving Montreal without that belt. does that mean he lives in Montreal now? you know what I mean? Dude, big change. Big change.
Far out, Rob.
Different winters there, dude. You know what I mean? So you got to be careful with what you say, right?
No, you do. He said to Islam, dude, book your next flight. I'm not leaving without the title. So, it's always – you've got to speak a big game. That's what makes the build-up to these fights interesting. So, I'm not slogging him for that. But JDM is your new champion. Mate, let us know what you thought.
So proud. Up the Aussies.
Dude, that's three Aussie champs from for the UFC in history.
Up the Aussies.
Right, like, right. We're going to talk about your fight next, but let's rattle off the rest of UFC 315.
I've got
right?
work to do. I'm pumped.
Yeah, I was going to say after that and after Volk.
Yeah, man, I'm inspired. Like the spirit's back. Like it didn't leave, but I am pumped. Like let's go. Let's finish this up first.
Give us 5 minutes. All right, Valentina Shevchenko defeats Manon Friol for the title she defends 48-47. This was not the most exciting fight. What do you think, Rob?
I don't think it was the most exciting fight, but I will say one thing that was for one, Valentina really, really, really got respect from that first round.
Oh, hell
like,
yeah.
Like, did some big damage to Friol straight out of the gate. I think she busted her nose. It looked like it.
With the counter rights? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, she was squinting and grimacing every time she kind of nudged it. You know what I mean? I don't know. And tell me if I'm completely wrong, okay? But I don't know what fight the commentators were watching.
In like, what sense?
They had Manon a lot for a few of the rounds. Like I didn't have Manon in the fight at all, really. Like
in any rounds at all?
I think she took some of them, but I don't think they were as significant.
You know, I have it here. This is my opinion. I think Manon won rounds 2 and 3, but they were very close and they could go either way because Manon was doing a lot of clinching and a lot of knees in the clinch, but you have to, and a lot of rabid punches, but you have to ask yourself how much damage was actually being done. You know what I mean? Yeah. But then regardless, I thought Valentina won the last two rounds. So yeah. I thought it was close, but still pretty clear that Val won.
She was definitely doing that control time on the wall well.
Yeah.
And you saw the control time, but I don't think that scores. Like, understandably, everyone's going to say, well, what about with Pereira and Ankalaev? Okay. I get it. I get it.
No, Ankalaev was throwing and landing. Like, Manon, like, not as much.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think you can win fights just by pushing someone up against the fence and holding them there.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to open myself up to a huge argument and debate about this because do not, for one, don't get me wrong. If that'll win me fights and if I could do it well, I'd be doing it too. Okay. I'd be the first guy. Right. Right. But like in a close fight, it doesn't like, and I'm pretty sure actually I've done that before. So, but in a close fight against the champion, you're trying to take a title away. It's hard to do. Mm. It's just hard to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think you can just, maybe you can. You can just inch out wins that way, or maybe it can be just enough to get a win if it's been significant. If the fight has been close enough to begin with that we start looking at things like that. But I don't know. I just think that Shevchenko just was really countering super well. It looked the first round was so strong, which may have lent to all the other strikes. Every time she landed that right, every time she touched that nose, it looked like Friol got hurt. I don't know. Friol was kind of pushing her up against the fence, holding her there. I don't know. There wasn't a lot of significant moments bar that first round in that fight for me.
Look, overall, it was a pretty low output fight. Like, let's be real. The one thing that did surprise me, though, is that, you know, Manon looked huge in there and she was overpowering Val, I think, more than a lot of people thought she would, including myself. Like, I thought Val was just going to, like she did against Grasso, it's going to be a lot of wrestling if she can't stand and trade. And I saw a lot of predictions saying that Val's just going to wrestle her to the ground for 5 rounds. That's not what happened whatsoever. So that did surprise me. But overall, I agree. Val definitely won that fight, but not in a convincing fashion. So let's see what the next fight is. But after that, we had a very, let's say, controversial decision. Ayman Zahabi apparently defeating Jose Aldo by a decision. Unanimous 29-28. Jose Aldo retires afterwards as well. Who do you think won this fight? Like, be honest with me.
I thought Ayman won.
Okay.
I thought Ayman won.
All right.
Aldo had a really good first round.
Definitely.
Okay. Ayman brought it back in the second. Okay. Now, that third round was wild. That's where everything gets thrown out. Everything kind of just went to crazy town. So Aldo almost kills Zahavi.
The soccer kick to the head, almost man. I thought
twice,
he died.
Dude, twice. Twice. Okay. I don't know how Eamon survived.
Neither.
At all. Got just grit, determination, heart.
Yeah.
Then Aldo practically dies. Like, I'm sure he was practically a corpse on his back at one point. When at the end of that fight, Aldo had nothing. Nothing. He had all energy reserves were going to breathing. It is crazy how gassed he was from that chase to win.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That looked so bad. I thought they were going to stop the fight.
Mm.
Like, and so round three, I would have gave it to Zahavi.
I agree, but it wasn't because Aldo did that damage and arguably almost finished the fight himself, it wasn't a 10-8. So 10-9 probably comes down to the second round. It just depends where you thought or who you thought won. I thought Aldo did a little bit more, and that's why a lot of people online thought that, you know, Aldo was robbed, Zahavi won. I will say this though, right? I understand Aldo's decision to retire, because after that short sprint where he dropped Zahavi and he was looking to secure the win, for him to gas himself out so much in that brief period of time does reinforce the fact that his body's just not there anymore. He's like, he doesn't have, as he said, what is required, especially he had weight cutting issues as well. It was sad to see.
It is crazy to think he's still fighting.
I know. Like, I know.
You know how young he is still? Like,
Jose Aldo?
Yeah.
He's like, I thought he was 38. I thought he was 37. Okay. Yeah.
38. Like,
but you know Zahabi's also like 37 as well, right?
No, I got that completely wrong. I thought he was much younger.
No, he's a bit older now, man.
Aldo's been fighting forever.
Yeah, he has.
Like, and it's not just he's been fighting forever. He's been taking hard fights. He's fought everybody. He's fought the who's who.
Yeah.
He's changed weight divisions multiple times. Like,
yeah.
At some point, you just get sick of it, dude. Like, you get sick of – not only do you get sick of the camps, because the camps are hard, but you're sick of getting hit. You're sick of going to war. It's like a lot of people don't get it. Like, you can get hit. Anyone can get hit. But it's choosing to get hit. Yeah. And you know what? It's choosing to get hit, and then afterwards choosing to get hit again and again and again for 5 minutes when you're tired.
Yeah.
Like, it is so hard, so hard. And all the respect in the world to him for the career that he's had and the things that he's achieved and done. Like, that was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, man. You know? Like, there's no shame. Legacy cemented. He's a Hall of Famer. Like,
already.
Yeah, it's easy. So it was just a shame. I was hoping that his additional run in the UFC would have gone a little bit differently, but you had that Mario Bautista fight, then you had this fight. It's a bit of a shame how it ended, but still, have a good retirement, Jose. Like, it's been awesome to see you fight. Last couple of fights in this main card, we can just kind of breeze past.
Wait, quickly, I want to say congratulations to Eamon, though. Took some time off, went to coaching. I've trained with Eamon. I know.
Eamon. Oh, have you?
Yeah, way back, way back when.
Wow. With his brother for us as well?
Huh?
With his brother as well?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
nice.
Could try. I trained there the beginning of my UFC career. And
damn, that's a long time ago, bro.
Yeah, dude, it is now. So I'm really happy to see him in the winning column to get a win over such a legend in Aldo. Just, good on him. Good on you.
Can I say this before moving on? Because I remember. He calls out Chito Vera at the end of that fight. What do you think of that?
That's a crazy fight, dude. Chito's a dog. But then, I don't know, Eamon, you know, the cornering was really good in Eamon's fight. It was put on pressure, try to stay away from those bombs. Aldo was having, Aldo really cemented his power in the first round, at the start of the first round, but they knew he couldn't sustain it. So just keep the pressure on, keep moving, keep it up. And I don't know what that looks like against Vera.
Yeah.
Because Vera can hang in there. He won't just fall off. He'll just hang in there like a dog. And the way you beat Vera is the way O'Malley, dude, you know, yep. you sting him, you move, you sting him and move. Like, you know, you beat him with speed. I don't know if Eamon has that sort of speed and ability to do that. He likes making it in dogfight. He likes gassing his opponents out.
Yeah. I don't think he has that speed. We saw even in that fight how much faster Jose Aldo was. Mm. If Jose Aldo was younger and doesn't gas out, he wins that fight. Like, that's in my humble opinion. But yeah, rest of the main card, Natalia Silva defeats Alexa Grasso quite convincingly. She was so fast, so quick. We also had as well Benoit Saint-Denis defeating Karl Prepelec. This was meant to be Yoel Alvarez. So Prepelec steps in, hasn't fought in the UFC for 6 years. So Benoit probably won the fight like he should have. But it was still nice to see him back in the winning column. Overall, Rob, what do you think of UFC 315?
Mate, I'm so happy. Happy as Larry. Like we have another Australian champion. Another belt's being brought back to the homeland. So it's just good to see. It's great It's great for the sport here. Every time we get our Aussies up in that upper echelon of MMA, the sport just explodes here. The amount of media and press explodes. And good times ahead.
Do you know what it might mean? Maybe not, because I don't think Islam would ever want to fight in Australia again, because he has horrible things to say about his last experience, just given the timing and everything. But could you imagine JDM against Islam back in Australia, in Perth or something? Be so good.
it would be a numbered card in Perth, maybe.
Mm. Oh, all right. Let's see what happens next. But Rob, as we alluded to during this broadcast, before the broadcast even started, your next fight was announced. It is you against Rainier Derrida at UFC Abu Dhabi Fight Night main event, July 27. Can you just like explain how all of this came about? Because I'm sure there is a bit of a backstory to this. Go on. It's all you.
Yeah, so not really.
Really? Okay, all right. I'll ask really you questions then, but go on.
So the beginning of the year, I took some time off after Christmas to get all my teeth sorted and just to work on some other projects. Yeah. And then I came back and I got back into training, started working with the team, told my manager, like, speak to him, tell him I'm looking for like late June, early July.
Okay.
International Fight Week looks good. Let's get something. Keep working around. They come back to me. They said, oh no. And I was also kind of mentioning Strickland at the time, because I thought, like,
I remember
I've spoken about this.
Yep.
We're both up there. It makes sense. We've never fought. Let's get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They came back to me and said, Strickland has only just getting back into training. He's not, like, we can try and get that fight to happen, but we don't know when it'll happen. We don't know what's going to happen. But Delidze, this is just after Delidze had that good win.
Yep.
Against Vittori.
Vittori. Yeah.
And they said, but Delizio is ready and willing. And I was like, done. Sign me up. Let's go. So I thought I was getting ready for late June, which was in Baku. But then they started sliding that cut up. And then they said, actually, hold tight. Things are moving. As you've seen, it's not just my division, a lot of other divisions. UFC is very fluid. Got to move around. A lot of moving parts. All right. So weeks go by. I'm still training, prepping for it. But it's hard because I haven't signed anything. Nothing's happened, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
And then literally like 4 days ago, they're like, RDR, Derrida, main event, Abu Dhabi, July 28th. I was like, wow, what happened to the other one?
What happened to Roman?
I don't know what happened to anything, okay? But all I know is that the date fit. I understand, like, he's not in the top 10 yet, but he just beat Bo Nickel. He's a good, hard fight. He had two titles in one. He's a hard fight. I'm sure he'll be in the top 10 before long. Like, he's a top 10 fighter, competitor at least. Absolutely. It's a hard fight. Let's do it. July's a good time. Done. So I just said yes straight away. And
so before we talk about RDR, I need to ask about the lead up. So first of all, because people are going to say this, and I don't want to discredit him, this is not a case of Sean Strickland quote unquote ducking you. He just got back into the training. The timing simply didn't work out for him.
No. I don't have any context of any conversations that happened with any of the other parties.
Yeah.
Okay. My only thing is, like, I was offered one person, I said yes.
Hmm.
I was offered another person, I said yes. And here we are fighting in July. My big thing is, like, I don't pick my opponents, but I like to give dates. Okay, I like to give dates of when I'd like to fight because I like to cut weight properly. I don't like rushing things. I like getting some preparation under my belt and et cetera, et cetera. So
All right.
But everything's kind of worked out. We're 11 weeks from Abu Dhabi, main event, 5 rounds. It's always fun. You know, I love being, love my face on a poster. Kids love it. So, yeah, it's, I look forward to getting work done.
So another question that I have for you as well. A few weeks ago, Caio Bahio came out and said, he named you and a few other middleweights saying that everyone was ducking him. Were you ever offered Caio at any stage? Was there any merit to what he had to say then?
No, I was never offered him. Anyone I was offered, I said, anyone I was offered, I said yes to.
All right.
Like, and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. So now it's Renita Ritter. Obviously, did you watch the Bo Nickel fight? Because you and I weren't able to do our breakdown. Bits he and, looked really good, man.
Yeah, bits and pieces. I haven't done a lot of – it wasn't in my to-do list up until I said yes to the fight. So I definitely will be watching that fight much closer and a lot of his other fights.
All right, man. So look, you know, Alex does the job. JDM does the job. We're looking forward to it, bro. I'm just saying.
Mate, it's I'm looking forward to it as well. You know, I want to get back in there. I want to get back in that winning column. And I got some things. I understand. I don't want to fight forever. You know, I got a couple of years left in my career, and I want that fairy tale ending. You know, especially after seeing Volk and now JDM get up. Like, I want that fairy tale ending. That's where I want to get up, work my way up to the title, win the belt, and sail off into the sunset. So that's the dream I'm pushing and fighting for right now.
All right, sweet, man. Well, we're gonna see how it all goes. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below for Rob's next fight against Rainier de Ritter. But that's it. Unless you had anything to say to close off the UFC segment, there's a game that I want to ask you about because people have been yelling at us to cover it. And you probably know what it is.
Let's go.
Elder Scrolls 4.
I do because I can see the run sheet.
You can see the run sheet. Oblivion Remastered, all right? While you were away, Bethesda Shadow drops it. It's made in Unreal Engine, made by Virtuous. I don't know if you got the opportunity to play it yet, but let us know your thoughts, man. You said that Oblivion was your preferred Elder Scrolls game over Skyrim, so I just want to know your thoughts about the remaster.
I haven't played it.
Do you need a code? Is that what it is?
I'm not that cheap, dude. I refuse to play anything because it's not free. No, honestly, I just haven't. It's like I've got to be in moods, and I'm not in. Honestly, I think Skyrim burnt me out from Elder Scrolls. Like, and I'm
really?
Sure. Comment below, but I'm sure it's done that to a lot of other people as well. But I think Skyrim burnt me out of Elder Scrolls at the moment. So I'm still recovering. I'm still recovering from that. I always I loved Oblivion. I loved Oblivion. I loved the entire game. I loved the DLCs, like Sheogorath's Realm, the Knights of the Nine. I thought it was just unbelievable, all of it, you know. And I've heard nothing but good things about the game. Have you played it?
I have, man. I've put about 40 hours or so into it. Well, funnily, like I started a character. I played as a Khajiit, and then I re-rolled.
Khajiit? A cat person?
Just hear me out. Khajiits, if you've seen the remaster, are probably the best-looking race, and that's all I went off. They look so good in the remaster. Orcs look horrible.
There is no world where they look they're the best-looking character.
I'm telling you right now. They look so good at the remaster.
I'd rather be an orc. I'd rather
they
be
look,
a
orcs
filthy,
look so ugly, bro.
Flat-nosed orc. All right.
But look, I went with a Khajiit. I was playing for a little bit, but then I re-rolled because the way that they've slightly changed the leveling system, where every time that you level up, you have 12 virtue points to assign across 3 different attributes, and you can get to the stage where if you kind of mess up a little bit, you can't get everything to 100 or close to 100. So you've got to invest in luck early. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to re-roll. So they've made some changes there. They've made some changes that are quality of life. But for the most part, this is not a remake. It's a remaster. It just looks really good. It's in Unreal Engine. Some performance issues here and there because it is an Unreal. But I think they've done a pretty good job to keep the the nostalgia and the jank of Oblivion, but just bring it into the, you know, into 2025. Mm-hmm. I think you'll like it, man. I think you'll like it because it's just a nice fresh coat of paint. You know?
Yeah. Are there already mods for it? There has to be, right?
Oh, easy. Yeah. That was the question because this is not a game that quote unquote officially supports mods like Oblivion and Skyrim because this is not in Creation Engine, right? BGS's engine. But people can Unreal Engine and
I just want Unreal. Some survival mechanics. That's all. I want to have to eat, drink, and sleep. I reckon
those exist.
I'm on the cusp of jumping into Fallout 4 again.
Four. Okay. What we're watching, playing, and reading. Fallout 4. Why?
Oh, we're back.
tell me why Fallout 4.
No, I'm on the cusp. I haven't played it, so it's not really part of this section, right?
Mm.
But I just want. I want to like life sim a game where I go scavenging. Like I want a dungeon crawler that is also that has life sim elements. Okay. That's what I want. That's what I've been looking for. I want to go dungeon delving, have to worry about food, hunger, and thirst, and sleep whilst I'm in the dungeon. Then I can leave the dungeon and just cruise out a bit. Because dungeon diving is stressful. I just want to chill out.
That's stressful.
That's what I want. And I feel like Fallout 4 can do that because they brought in the survival Fallout 4 and et cetera. Like, yeah, it's cool. But that's not what I've been playing.
Okay, you've said though with Fallout 4, that's like the only way to play it. You need to play with survival.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It's so good. And I've realized I've just started playing a game called Keplerth.
God, you always name the weirdest games.
It's an indie
bro.
Game. Keplerth. And dude, I'm really enjoying it. I'm surprised at how much I'm enjoying it. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hasn't received enough love. I don't know why it's flown under so many people's radar, but it's like kind of like a base building Terraria style top down dungeon crawling game. Okay.
Interesting.
So you kill things to get to unlock new things, to build stuff, to kill more things.
Okay.
Okay. But you can also build a village, get settlers, build yourself a base, get pets and mounts and things like that. I don't know. It's got a lot of cool features and cool functions. I'm really, really enjoying it. I don't know why it doesn't have more looks and likes, really.
It does have a somewhat decent amount of reviews overall, like 3,500 on Steam. But yeah, you're right. It hasn't like taken off.
Yeah, it should. It's so good. It's so good. Oh, I'm really enjoying it. I'm surprised at how much I'm enjoying it. How many hours have I got in it?
So, funnily enough, the top Redditor that I can see on Google, someone's like, why is this game so unpopular?
Yeah. I don't know. I think criticisms for games have gotten a bit out of control, to be honest.
That's fair. Okay. Interesting.
Because the new patch hot update for No Rest for the Wicked dropped. And I love that game. Like, it's so much fun to play. It's enjoyable. The art style, honestly, it might be one of my favorite art styles about pixel art. I like pixel art, but it is gorgeous to play. And it was so much fun. And the developers are really trying to do stuff and they just get crucified online.
Mm.
Like crucified. And it's like, people just need to chill out, man. You know what I mean? They need to just chill out.
Dude, like, online gaming discourse is just, it's toxic nowadays. It really is.
I don't know. Like, back in the day, if you played a bad game or your game you just didn't enjoy, you just didn't play it. You didn't have to go tell everyone you didn't like it, like, online.
That's why I like our podcast and our safe little bubble because we're just like, we like this or we didn't like this and we move on with our lives.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Exactly. Exactly. And it's just bias. It's our opinion. We don't don't really care. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, but cool. Yeah,
that's what I've been playing, Keplerth. What else? You know what? Have you ever heard of the game called Last Epoch?
I have heard of Last Epoch. That's one
So it's one of the ARPGs up there with like Diablo and PoE 2 and everything else. Mm-hmm. I downloaded it thinking, like, let's jump into it. I'm going to make Paladin, smash stuff, get some dopamine hits. Brother, I got maybe 47 minutes into it and I just realized my ARPG days are over. They're gone.
Wait, why?
I don't have it in me to grind seasons. I don't have it in me to if I can't pause it, I can't really play it anymore. Like,
I remember you saying that when you tried to play Diablo 4. I kind of sensed it in you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's gone.
All right. It's gone. That's sad, man. That's sad. Yeah. But it happens, you know? Yeah, like, when I grew up, I played a lot of, like, you know, most wanted racing games, and I just can't touch them anymore. I remember I tried recently. That's not for me anymore, you know?
What have you been playing lately?
Okay, so Doom the Dark Ages. It's not out yet, but I reviewed it early, and the embargo dropped the other day. It's a really, really solid Doom game. I did a different video about it on my channel, and it's hard to compete with the highs of Doom Eternal. Like, Doom Eternal was a game that I really bloody enjoyed. And they've changed it. I've talked about this before. They've changed how it feels. So it's not jump and shoot. It's more grounded. You're more heavy. You have a shield. It's in medieval times. But I really like how it feels. I really like it's a slightly slower pace compared to Eternal. Every level you have secrets to discover. So you get time to explore, find all the secrets and the upgrades for your weapons, etc. Then you move on to the next. The cinematics are awesome. It's like the way that I described it. It's like a Marvel movie. It's like a popcorn flick, but in games. You go there, you're gonna have a fun time, and I'm enjoying it, man. Like, don't get me wrong, it's not completely perfect. I think the game's probably too easy. I fundamentally believe that. I'm not like the best at shooters or anything, right? But I was playing on Hurt Me Plenty, which is the equivalent of normal.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm not dying. I'm not dying at all. Like, once you learn how to parry with the shield and which weapons are really good, especially when you upgrade it, especially the Cycler and the chain shot and the super shotgun, I was like, I'm never dying. I'm going to try and play Ultraviolence, which is hard. And I rarely died on Ultraviolence either, unless I really messed up or I was trying to test something. So I don't know what it is. I feel like people are going to find it to be on the easier side, especially compared to Eternal. But everything else is awesome. I'm enjoying playing it. I think it's just going to be a solid game for this year that everyone should pick up, especially if you're a Doom fan. I'm having fun, man. I think it's a solid game.
I'm excited to give it a go once it drops.
Yeah,
you know, a slower Doom game is right up my speed, right up my alley. Like, Eternal is just too fast for me.
I said this, man. Like, they could have just done more Eternal, Doom Eternal 2.0, and I'm sure some people would have loved that. I'm glad that they tried something different.
Yeah.
I really am. Because you can't just keep doing the same stuff over and over. You know, it just gets boring. So I'm glad they took a chance, and I like the weight and the feel of everything. But yeah, like, certain things that maybe they could have changed or done better that for me would have taken it to an 8, from an 8 to a 9. But I think it's a solid 8 out of 10 game, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Quickly, before we jump into our viewer questions. So, what happened to Skyblivion?
Do you want me to explain it? So, Skyblivion is still being made. Yeah.
I heard about it the other day, and I was like, oof.
Look, okay. It's still being made, right? The mod team hasn't gone away. I think it's still set to come out later this year. Bethesda did them a solid and gave the whole team codes for the Oblivion remaster, right? And I actually think, and this is going to be maybe a weird take to some people, I think Skyblivion has gotten more attention now because of the Oblivion remaster. I think more people are going to be like, oh, Oblivion remaster was really cool. Now I'm keen to see how the Skyblivion team takes it, because I think they're going to do some of the things and some of the quality of life changes that maybe Virtuous didn't do with the Oblivion remaster. So they're still there. They're still all around. And I think a lot of people are still going to play their remaster, or their mod project. It's still there, man.
It's confusing.
It is confusing, but like, what do you do in their position? You can't just stop. You got to see it through.
Because they've been working on it for so long.
So many years, man. But like, they're volunteers. Like, clearly Bethesda, like, game studios got Virtuous involved with the remaster later than Skyblivion started. But they're professionals working full time, doing that every day. So that's why that turned around quicker. And using Unreal Engine. And they have experience porting and remastering games. So that's why it got done quicker. I think, I think you should check out Skyblivion. If you don't happen to play Oblivion Remastered now, you should definitely try Skyblivion once it drops. But yeah, man, as you said, viewer questions. If you have any viewer questions, as always, let us know in the comments below. But first up, we've got a question from @ZK3212. Hey, Rob, I'm 90% sure they're going to go with Sean versus Izzy too. This was before you announced your fight with Rainier, but any chance you could tweet out Sean calling him out to save us from being subjected to that boring rematch? I think that's a bit harsh. I'm going to say this. I think that's a bit of a harsh of a take. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I do also think that fight is the one that's taking place.
Yeah.
But who knows what the second fight looks like? You know, like he's a different person than when he lost the belt. So yeah. Sean. So I'm as much as people aren't, I'm kind of curious about that fight.
I am too, man. I am too. And it makes a lot of sense, especially after Izzy lost to Nassadeen and Drickus beat Sean. I think it and that just they just have that bad blood. The only interesting thing is like Izzy has said in recent times that the one person he actually genuinely hated in the lead up to a fight was Sean, not Drickus. It was Sean. So to subject himself to that over another fight, it's just like, why would you do that to yourself? Yeah. Like, why would you subject yourself and welcome those insults and everything that Sean says and does in a fight week? You know?
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. At Kerulion, I think. Question for Rob. You've often spoken about how much of a fan you are of the lightweight division. My question to you is, who would you rather fight over five rounds? Choices are Oliveira, Poirier, Holloway, Gaethje, and Sarukian, Chandler, Makhachev, or Fiziev. Anyone would be a banger. Who would be your preferred fight, Rob?
If I had to fight one of them guys
for five rounds.
Yeah, Chandler.
You picked the easiest one there.
You know what? We don't even have to explain it to anybody, all right? Like, let's just leave it like that. What do I want to do? Fight Holloway for five rounds? Or like that'll take forever, dude. Like, what a tiring fight that would be. I'm straight up taking Chandler. Do it in three. Let's go.
Next one is from @RainMan 558. Why is Rob always sipping from a huge water bottle? Feels like he's already weight cutting. Yeah. Rob, explain the water bottle because it is massive.
I just like drinking water out of that bottle. Like, I don't have to fill it up all the time. It's
sure.
I know if I drink two of them, I've drank 5 liters in the day, and that's a lot of water.
I'm pretty. Is that how much you drink every day? Is two of those more, big bottles?
Probably about three of those, maybe. If you're training, three.
Not three if you're training, else. Two if you're not.
Yeah, at least. All right. Two. At least. Two.
All right. It's just comical sometimes when we were doing the podcast and you're just like,
now I'm thirsty. I used to try to hide it, but now I don't even try.
Freaking massive, man. And last question is, not last question, but next one is from @GrimRoman. The real question is, how long can the UFC continue to find reasons not to give Movsar a title shot? Surely Movsar is fighting Volk next, right? Would you agree, Rob? That's the fight.
There's not many other people, is there?
Well, there's not. I mean, there's like Yair, who Volk was beaten, and like, he beat too. Pitbull, but yeah. Like, who else would you put in that spot? And why not have Yair versus Diego Lopez? Could you imagine the bad blood in the lead up to that?
Oh, that'd be great. I want to see that fight happen.
It'd be so sick, man. Yep. But you still have. Okay, can I ask you this weird thing, by the way? Ilya is still in the rankings at featherweight. He's ranked third. These rankings, man, honestly, sometimes make no sense. Like, why is he there? You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't know how he's. I don't know. I don't know.
It's like, so weird.
How did he get demoted?
Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, no. If you're going to demote him because he's not in the division anymore, like, you just might as well remove
him
from the
rankings. I'm sure he'll get fixed up soon. They're probably just waiting for him to fight. I don't know. It's probably all done by AI anyway.
No, I think Dana wants it to get done by AI now because... So, if you... Oh, I don't know if you've actually, like, looked into it. So, there's, like, a panel of people that do the rankings, right? But they're not any of the top MMA, like, websites or outlets because they didn't want to opt into it because they saw it as a little bit of bias, you know, to say, oh, we can determine what the rankings are on a week-to-week basis. So they all opted out. So the people that are actually on this panel are, like, MMA outlets that you've never heard of or, like, they do university stuff. It's weird. It's so weird who actually does the rankings.
Yeah.
You know? But last one is from @PBJSamish. Give us some gaming content. Oblivion Remaster gets a Rob mod when?
I don't know, dude. I'm up for it, though. I am up for it.
Do you know why I brought this up? Because do you know what I watched the other day? It popped up in my recommended.
What's up?
Do you remember the stream when I was at Bethesda that we did of your Skyrim mod?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still on YouTube, bro. It's still there.
Nothing does on YouTube, right?
I remember when you first played that you couldn't get out of the... Like, you were listening to your voice in your head and it was just strange to you.
I hate it so much.
Why? Why did you hate it?
I don't like hearing myself. I don't like watching myself. I annoy me.
You could never do YouTube and edit your own videos. Oh, it would just be impossible for you.
Do my head in.
By the way, if you are interested in it, just Google Rob Whittaker Skyrim mod and you can find the video of Rob and I. It's so funny, man. It's so funny, that whole playthrough that we did. But that is it, Rob. That is actually a shorter episode of the MM Arcade podcast, episode 65. So do you have, as always, any closing thoughts?
I want to say thank you for everyone being patient with me while I was away. I went to Thailand for 2 weeks and I went and punched and kicked some stuff there, lose a bit of weight, get a little fitter. So obviously the episodes went out during that period, but thanks for waiting. We're back. Going to hit some consistency before I fly off again. So yeah, if you are new to the channel, please hit the like, subscribe, tell your mates, tell your friends. I hope you enjoyed it and I'll see you next week.